This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Thursday, April 15th, 2021. I'm Caleb Brown. One of the biggest claims made by supporters of healthcare certificate of need laws is that competition in healthcare can actually deny access to those who need it in rural areas. James Bailey is a professor of economics at Providence College. He's looked into that claim and found it wanting. We spoke this week about con laws and their predictable results. A certificate of need is in many states a hindrance to offering new services. And in my home state of Kentucky, one of those services is if you and your buddies want to buy a moving van or a moving truck and start helping people move from one place to another, boy, you need the state's permission to do that. And the state will then, in many industries, will ask the existing members of that industry, would you like this guy to enter into this business that you are currently in? And they almost uniformly will say, you know, we don't think that our state needs more either moving trucks or medical facilities. So no, I think we're fine. I think the state is good. And you can go ahead and tell them that no, they may not open their business. And people don't really believe that that's exactly how certificate of need works. But of course, that is how it works. And those incumbent industries or those incumbent businesses within those industries will have defenders. Some of those defenders are lobbyists. And I have spoken with some of these lobbyists who say regularly, well, the issue here is that if you tell anybody that they can open this kind of clinic or have an MRI machine or any number of other things that a medical service might provide, then there won't be anything in the rural areas. There won't be anything to serve remote populations. To what extent has there been research on this, and what have researchers found?
So there's been quite a bit of research on how con laws affect access to healthcare. One of the weird things about this is when people think about access to healthcare, everybody defines that a little bit differently. So is access to care how far I have to travel to the nearest hospital, or is it how am I going to pay when I get there? But really, whichever way you look at it, there's been a lot of research, and almost all of it has shown that if anything, con does the opposite and is going to make it harder to get care, which I think is what makes intuitive sense, that if you make it harder to open or expand a hospital or healthcare facility, that it's going to be harder for you as a consumer as a patient to find your way to one.
Yeah, the fear is that if I'm concerned that this guy down the block or in the next county is going to have more critical care beds or more MRI machines or some specific piece of hardware that's very expensive, that maybe then I do not want to invest in that piece of hardware because the returns to my hospital might be lower if I do make that investment.
Yeah. So I think with the proponents of certificate of need laws, it seems they have kind of this Rube Goldberg mentality going on, right? Where they're saying, you know, by making it harder and more expensive and more time consuming to build more hospitals, you know, somehow through this complicated series of events, you know, making it easier to build hospitals will actually give us fewer hospitals, right? And it sometimes, you know, once in a great while, things will work that way. But this is one of those times where common sense is just right. And yeah, making it harder and more expensive to do something means you get less of it, not more.
So what do we know from research, or what does research indicate about the level of access for states that do and do not have certificate of need laws?
You could look at what's happening to the number of different healthcare facilities. So previous academic research has found that the states that have these laws, and there are 35 of them in the healthcare space, states with certificate of need laws, they have about 13% fewer hospital beds, 14% fewer ambulatory surgery centers, 20% fewer psychiatric hospitals. And the biggest effect I've seen is that they have 49% fewer beds in the neonatal intensive care unit, or the NICU. It's where they take care of little babies who are born prematurely.
So I guess I can understand. That makes sense to me, because if you are an incumbent in an industry, you don't want to have excess capacity. You don't want to have that capacity just sitting there going unused. And to the extent that you're full up, and the people who might also want to consume those services or make use of those hospital beds, the fact that those other people might not have anywhere to go isn't top of mind.
Yeah, that's a great point. So the point that the biggest supporters of Khan for healthcare tend to be the state hospital associations. They represent the existing incumbent hospitals, and they tend to not want new competition from new hospitals. And they will make exactly this point about their occupancy rates, right? That if you own a hospital and you want your hospital to be full all the time, right? Because it means you're making money from all the beds you have, all the equipment you have, and not letting it be idle. But if you're a patient, you don't want that, right? You don't want the hospitals to be full all the time, because you know you might show up and have there be no room for you, right? Or even if they squeeze you into the last bed, all the doctors and nurses might be too busy to give you their full attention. And we can see this in the data, that hospital occupancy rates are a bit higher in states that have Khan. And the wait times for the emergency rooms in Khan states have been estimated to be 14% higher, 14% longer. And really, this all came to a head recently with COVID. So before COVID, right, it wasn't that common for the hospital to just be full, right? It's not something people had to worry about, that you would show up to the hospital and they would just say, "I'm sorry, we're full. We can't help you. Go somewhere else, or maybe we can stick you in a hallway or something. We don't have any rooms for you. We don't have any normal beds for you." And I think this is where we really saw the value of having a little bit of excess capacity in normal times, because sometimes times are not going to be normal, and an emergency is going to come along where you have a lot more patients to take care of than usual.
And the costs of that are not immediately obvious. I had some friends who had their first child in late March 2020. And they were very concerned about whether or not, if they showed up at a hospital, that they would be able to have a safe and pleasant experience of childbirth.
Yeah, it's a valid worry. And in fact, there's a brand new working paper by three academics out showing, sort of estimating what happened with the path of COVID in the Khan states versus the non-Khan states. And they found that because of this issue with intensive care units filling up and being, you know, more full in the Khan states that had fewer beds, they saw more deaths in the Khan states.
Overall death.
So most of this was due to COVID, that the ICU would fill up with COVID patients. And then if more COVID patients come in, you can't take them or can't take care of them as well. And so they found that there were 40 more COVID deaths per 100,000 residents in a state. So in most states, hundreds more COVID deaths as a result of ICUs being full and more full in the states with certificate of need. So 40 more COVID deaths and 57 overall deaths. So you were seeing some spillover where you're getting about 17 people. Extra people in these Khan states per 100,000. So, like I said, even this in a lot of states is going to be hundreds of people dying because that bed wasn't there for them. It was full with COVID patients, and at least part of this didn't have to be the case, right? If we'd had more beds there waiting for them.
Reform seems fairly straightforward, but as I like to say, many things are not complicated, but are nonetheless difficult. You have very entrenched interests that would like to keep things the way they are. And yet here you are pointing to life and death consequences of maintaining a policy where the people who are already in that business get to decide who gets to be in that business in the future.
Right. So COVID has really shown a light on this. And a lot of states did react, right? They realized that these laws that we made for normal times, their flaws which they have in normal times, are really highlighted here when hospitals are space constrained. And many states, about 20 states, did temporary waivers of their CON requirements, repealed some of them. And I think a lot of states are going to consider, you know, as we've seen with other regulations, we suspended these during the pandemic and it went great, right? Things were fine, right? And so you realize like, hey, why did we even have these laws in the first place? So it makes an opportunity to reconsider.
And even in those cases where states relaxed regulation or relaxed some of the laws that were preventing this capacity from going online, the effect of that might be somewhat muted if you understand that anybody who might be prone to making that type of investment in an environment where those laws are suspended, they might have made a larger investment if the law were repealed.
Right. So temporary waivers are great. I'm glad the states did them. But a permanent waiver would be so much more useful, right? Partly because some of these investments really take time, right? Building a new hospital, a new, you know, substance use treatment center, a new dialysis clinic, it's going to take time. And you're only going to do that if you know you're going to be able to run it by the time it's complete. And, you know, of course, the pandemic hit very suddenly. People, you know, would have, it would have been much more useful if we had had this higher capacity ahead of time, rather than needing to scramble to put it together at the last minute. The other thing I think is really interesting here is that just the growing coalition for reforming or repealing con laws, it's just bringing so many different groups together, right? Where the main proponents of con laws in practice are state hospital associations. But there are so many, there's such a big variety of groups that oppose them and would like to reform or repeal them. So libertarians, of course, would like to repeal these like most regulations, but it's very much not just regulation, not just libertarians. So economists of basically all political stripes think that these laws are kind of crazy. The big antitrust agencies, the Federal Trade Commission and the Department of Justice, have come out officially against Certificate of Need. They would sort of make the states repeal it if they could, because if hospitals were doing this, trying to squash the competition, if they were just doing this doing it themselves, it would be illegal. But because they get a state board to do their work for them, it's currently legal. And so the FTC and the DOJ, they can't actually sue the hospitals to stop this. They have to just ask nicely, like, hey, states, we think these laws are a little crazy. Could you please repeal them?
Yeah, we haven't even talked about prices. You know, there's obviously a secondary effect of having hospital beds, having limited capacity of hospital beds and other services, which is prices go up. What research has been done in that area?
Right. So average prices do seem to be higher in the con states, and you see higher overall spending as well. I've estimated that it's something in the range of 3 to 10% higher healthcare spending in con states.
James Bailey is a professor of economics at Providence College. We spoke earlier this week. Subscribe to the Cato Daily Podcast anywhere you please and follow us on Twitter @CatoPodcast.